Welcome to the Speak Up Talk Radio Network. I am your hostess, Pat Rulo. We bring you hand-selected hosts, podcasts, and talk radio programming with listen options, 24/7 streaming or listen on demand. We also feature one-on-one segments with important guests, people who have something to say that you need to hear. And if you have something to say and would like to be featured on the network, please visit speakuptalkradio.com for all of the details or contact us at pr@speakuptalkradio.com. Well, sometimes when you land on a website page, you immediately feel a connection. Well, this happened to me when I first learned of today's guest. And by the end of our conversation today, I am guessing that you will know what I'm talking about. She is Amy Lyle. Amy is an author, comedian slash actor, and a screenwriter who grew up in Marietta, Ohio, which is in the heart of Appalachia, known for a population that is partial to moonshine and prone to acts of violence. Obsessed with comedians and comedic writers, she developed a writing style that is self-deprecating, hilarious, and slightly neurotic. Amy has self-diagnosed herself with many conditions, including OCD, uncontrollable recurring thoughts vacillating from cleaning to running away, misophonia, having intense angry reactions to lip smacking, I have that one as well, Tourette's syndrome, yelling out random words, sedate phobia, finding silence vexing and scary, apraxia, difficulty pronouncing words, and IBS, irritable bowel syndrome. She's taking many, many natural herbal supplements, and Amy and her second husband, Peter, are having many issues raising their four teenagers and large dog together in the suburbs just north of Atlanta. Her alma mater, the Ohio State University. Yay, go Buckeyes. And today we are here to take a peek inside her life that she wrote about in her comedic memoir. So let's bring her on. Welcome to the network, Amy.
Thank you for having me. That is the best introduction anyone's ever given me, ever.
Well, thank you. Now, when I saw your website for the first time, as I mentioned at the top, I knew I just had to meet you because I just feel that you're honest and refreshing, and I love your quote, "I am not a failure, I'm just having a little bit of trouble right now." I think those few words are so relatable.
I hope that people feel that out of the book, that that's the intention, is that we all are trying to do the best we can, and there's a lot of humor just in everyday life. And, you know, my book, I focus a lot on our lives as women and our lives as moms. A lot of it's focused on that because there's a lot of pain and suffering there, but there's also a lot of fun,
absolutely,
funny stuff.
For sure, for sure. And I'm sure we're going to get into some of that in a minute. You know, I personally find it quite attractive, and I don't mean in a physical sense, but when you come across someone who is willing to share personal and sometimes mortifying moments with the public, because a person doesn't have to. So what prompted you, a 40-year-old mom, to write about such experiences?
Well, you had mentioned I wrote a screenplay, and under the mentorship of a gentleman that had vetted films for Disney for 10 years. And so he was my mentor. So I was done with the film. He passed me on to a recommended entertainment attorney in Santa Monica. And so, you know, even with a recommendation, this warm, you know, introduction, I called the attorney and said, you know, voila, my female-centric, hilarious screenplay is now available for purchase. And he said, "You're no one, you don't know anyone, you don't have any money, I am not representing you." And I was shocked, and I said, "That makes me so sad." Like, I didn't know what to say, I'd worked so hard. And he started giggling, and he said, "Okay, I'm going to give you some free advice. You can't just roll up here in Hollywood, you need to have a blog or a book, you need to get on the map." And I said, "Well, what would I write a book about?" He said, "Write what you know." And he hung up on me. And immediately, Pat, I'm not kidding you, immediately I'm like, I have had a lot of failures. And that's how that happened. And it was solid advice. It was very good advice. And now, a year later, that same attorney and I are working together to make my film this summer. And so it was absolutely good advice. But that I just wrote about, to be honest with you, what I was most familiar with, and that was a lot of funny failures.
Oh my gosh, as I'm listening to this conversation, I would think that 99% of the people, if they got that response from an attorney, would hang up and say, "What a jerk," you know, and be really upset and angry. But it's so interesting that you took that advice and you thought it was sad and not get angry about it and actually do something about it and turn it around. And now the two of you are working. I think that's a huge success story in itself, no matter what happens to the screenplay.
I know. And it's, you know, and then with the screenplay, a lot of people ask me, they say, do you want to be in the, you know, do you want to star in it? No. Do you want to direct it? No. You know, I don't know anything about that. And so I do come to the table for with a love of writing and comedy and empowering people and, you know, making, I want to make, you know, people feel better about themselves. But, I don't know anything about filmmaking. And so I do have to come, and the same for me in publishing. I don't know anything about publishing. Everything I'm doing is kind of in my heart and fun and getting to do stuff like this and just trying to tell my story, really. And so, if somebody who is much wiser, who's recommended, you know, been in the business for 30 years says, you need to write a book, I trust them. I probably need to write a book. So I just trying to keep an open mind when people give me, advice.
Wow. That's very inspiring and solid advice yourself. So tell us about the book, the title, and tell us what you decided to write about.
The book is The Amy Binegar Chemist Lyle Book of Failures, which I think screams in the title, this chick has some issues right away. And then, you know, I opened the book with, you know, most of these stories are true, but some of them are lies. You know, I got to protect the innocent and protect the guilty. And it really just... It's really truly a book of essays in the spirit of if people like David Sedaris or Tina Fey or Jim Gaffigan or Chelsea Handler, it's short, you know, essays. You can pick it up and put it down and you can skip around. And it starts from, you know, failures, you know, going back to high school, getting in some trouble, to, you know, my, love for burritos. I cannot diet because I have an obsession. I have a chapter in there called The Summer of the Burrito, and you know, fighting aging as we all do, and I'm not going down gracefully. I will not. I will fight and buy potions and lotions and fillers, and you know, getting divorced, you know, some of it is a little bit more serious. You know, I had my ex-husband say, you know, I would like a divorce. That was you know, very painful moment. We get along now, but you know, being an actor locally, and you know, I have a funny story in there where I was promised this grape outfit, super popular grape outfit. The kids love it. It's like, imagine 1,000 balloons all over your body jiggling. It's so cute. And you know, being told you're not going to be the grape today, and I kind of had a meltdown on not being a grape. But just all kinds of being fired. You know, I have a whole chapter of being fired, you know, from a high school position at Burger King because I refused to scrape the gum off the bottom of the table, to, you know, some other, just really, it truly is a funny memoir, missteps, inadequacies, and faux pas. It's all in there.
And Amy, we all have those. You know, everybody.
Some people you would never know, though. Yep. They would never tell.
Mm-hmm. So what was it like for you to tell about these moments? Was it easy for you to write this, or was it difficult to be so open?
Oh, my gosh. It was so fun. And, you know, I was calling my girlfriends like, come on. You know me for 20 years. What other failures do I have? And they're like, okay, well, remember that one time on the tennis trip. And so it was so fun to kind of rehash, you know, my life with some of my girlfriends to remind me of this. And so that has been so fun. And in the book, I, you know, have a lot of my girlfriends, and I use a lot of their real names. For example, I'm so lucky to have a couple girlfriends that, you know, we really can tell anything to. And, so I put my friend Sharon in there, who she's the type of person that when she calls you, you're kind of, you feel like you've missed the first 5 minutes of the conversation and you're just kind of joining. And so I have a conversation in there about her being in the doctor's office, and her, I answer the phone saying hello, and she says, oh my gosh, my vagina is too clean.
Oh.
And I'm like, what is going on? And then meanwhile, she's this conversation, she's in the elevator talking to me, and then all of a sudden she's talking about these issues, and then she's trying to order something from Wendy's. It's just like, she's just like a whirlwind, like a Tasmanian devil that calls me, and then she's like, okay, I gotta go, bye. And so I tried to capture some of that female, you know, stuff. Like one time she called me and it was Pluto was no longer a planet, but it was a planet a few years ago. And her one son didn't do well because he didn't know that it was no longer a planet. But now they've reinstated it, and the pressures of that. Just you know, funny, you know, just trying to highlight women. What would we do without our girlfriends? I would not be able to survive without my girlfriends.
I figured you had close gal pals, because when I read the testimonials on the back of your book, it seemed like it was a couple girlfriends and your mom, and it just that in itself is funny.
Yes, I tried to get a big name writer to give me a big, nice, fat review, and she's like, "I'd love to for $10,000." I was like, "Oh, wow! You know what? I'm just gonna have my girlfriends."
Call my mom. I love that. I kind of related to that as well. I knew that's what happened. You know, everybody's out there trying to scramble about, trying to find that big name, and you're like, forget that.
Yeah, sure, I wasn't in the budget initially, so.
Now, you mentioned that your book is an essay, is kind of like Saturday Night Live vignettes. And mm-hmm. is that because you do stand-up comedy and kind of a nice way just to segue from one to the other?
Yes, and I would say that most people that I'm so excited, Pat, to have. I mean, it was such, imagine I'm a mom of four kids, you know, living in the suburbs, and I write this little book, and to go onto Amazon on the ebooks and see my book next to David Sedaris and next to Amy Schumer and next to Anna Kendrick. I mean, it's just such a weird, exciting thing to see. Like, I just get, you know, there, and it's, you know, David Sedaris, 9,000 reviews, and, you know, Tina Fey, 5,000 reviews, and it's like Amy Lyle, 9 reviews. It's just like the weirdest situation. But most of those people, I've read all their books. I love comedy books. It's we just have a love of storytelling. You know, we're usually good cocktail party guests, and we love telling stories. And there is a rhythm to telling a story in stand-up comedy. And there, I believe that there is also a rhythm when you're, and that works well in an essay format because it's shorter.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And especially in today's environment where people consume things in a whole lot shorter bites than they used to.
Yes.
I watch your YouTube video of you on stage, and again, your content, as you just said, it's so, there was a rhythm to it, but it was so relatable, just talking about, you were talking about Facebook and how people post these crazy things on Facebook, and everyone in the audience, you could just say, yes, yes, we understand, we agree.
Yes, oh my gosh, that is, stand-up comedy is like just a shot of adrenaline into your body. It is the most exciting, crazy, wonderful feeling that you can have in the whole world. And I wish I had I do get the opportunity to do stand-up comedy a lot locally, like charity events and stuff like that. But I have four kids, so I can't do that all the time. But it is such a magical thing. And you know if you're winning or you're losing immediately. There's no lying. It's truth. So if you're telling a story, people are either getting it or they're not getting it. And it's a, you know, you really have to put yourself out there. I recently did a sit down comedy. I'll have to send it to you. And it was about, Harvey Weinstein, which is not a funny topic. But it was about, females slut shaming the victims and, you know, blaming them. How come they didn't come forward sooner? And how come they, you know, sat on this for 20 years, and, you know, why did they work with him again, and all this stuff. And so I did this sit-down comedy, and it was called You Probably Did More for Less. And talking about, you know, when I was at Ohio State, we'd have to wear boots to the bar. There was so much, you know, beer on the floor at Ohio State, and you're drinking beer out of a mop bucket, literally. That's what they serve the beer in, is a mop bucket, and you had red Solo cups. And, you know, a cute boy's like, hey, you know, why don't we get out of here? I got a six pack in the fridge. My roommate's out of town, and I'll get you a pizza. And you know, how many of your girlfriends were like, okay, like you're gonna compare that this woman who's 20 years old shows up, an assistant says go to Harvey Weinstein's room. There's caviar, there's champagne, and he's telling you you're gonna be in a movie with Ryan Reynolds, and the only thing that's standing between you and a movie with Ryan Reynolds is to watch him take a shower. You know, I'm not saying that's a good thing to do. I'm just saying these people weren't in that situation. You don't know what you would do in that situation.
Yeah. How risky that is for you to take any kind of an issue, really, and decide what your social comment is going to be on it, and then get up there in front of people, and you don't know if you're going to fall flat or if they're going to get it.
Right, and it is a, it's just like the book too. You, comedy is so personal. I mean, if you, you can really tell such a great first date question to ask people, you know, who do they love? Do they love funny movies? Who, what comedians do they relate to? It really is, there's not a lot of gray area. You either like it or you're not. You're either drawn to that or you're not drawn to it. And with the book, I feel like I was so well intended to lift women up. And luckily, the response has been, you know, either people emailing me or people leaving a comment on Amazon reviews or whatever, saying, oh my gosh, you made me feel better about my life. You made me feel, one woman said, you made me feel like I suck less. You know, you make me feel normal. And that was the goal of the book, was to be like, hey, we're all doing the best we can. We all want to be good moms. We all want to be good employees. We all want to be good wives. There's a lot of balls in the air, and most of the time, everything's not going perfectly. But you know what? It's okay, and we're in this together. And, you know, move forward and lean on each other. And that was the intention. And my issues are very, you know, suburban mom type issues. They are. And so I have got some criticism from that, just saying, you don't have any problems. You know, you think you're funny. You don't even know what real problems are. And I think that's a little unfair for people to say that. And I also would say people that I know that really have deep problems or are experiencing something very devastating, like a death of a child or a sickness or whatever, I think that if you would ask them their ability to recover from that, part of that would be sharing that pain with their friends. It's the same. So, do you know what I mean? It's a similar, I'm not making light of it. I'm saying even if you have deep issues, having a friend that you can share that with relieves your burden. And that was the point of the book.
No, absolutely. And I think that is a little unfair for someone to try to draw that parallel to say, oh, your problems aren't real. You're a suburban mom. You know, this doesn't compare to being homeless. And you're not trying to do that. That's
no,
not
and I think there's room in the world. And I am so drawn to, you know, A Tree Grows in Brooklyn and The Good Earth. I love, you know, Angela's Ashes, you know, in coming from, I'm from Appalachia. I mean, there's a lot of poverty. It's a poverty-stricken area. So I love stories of survival. And I love all that. And I love Russian literature. I love Anna Karenina. I love War and Peace. I really do. And there is a place in the world for that. And I love it. But there's also a place for me and Jim Gaffigan and Chelsea Handler. That's a different type of, you know, I think going to a movie and laughing and escaping, or reading a book and escaping for a few minutes, I think that is important for us to recharge ourselves once in a while, to just take a deep breath and laugh for a few minutes. It's, gosh, who would want to live in the world and just be so focused on all, the problems will be there when you're done taking your break for 5 minutes of reading a funny story. The problems will still be there. So you can take a break from that for a few seconds, I think.
Absolutely. It's like a mental health break. And you know, speaking of mental health, what is that like for you though? Because I would imagine a lot of people cannot bounce back from that. You know, you get all some negative pushback and negative feedback. Does that make you doubt yourself, or how do you keep going beyond that?
You know what? I had a big, I'm so glad you asked this question, because I am in a writer's group, and you're going to get hammered. If you're putting yourself out there in any capacity, you're going to catch somebody on a bad day, or somebody doesn't understand your intentions, and they're going to lash out at you. And sometimes in a very personal manner, like, I hate you. If I knew your kids, I hate them too. And they get so personal. And you know what I discovered? I don't like every actress. I don't like every singer. I don't like every writer. But I have this feeling and respect that, you know what? They're out there and they're doing what they love. And maybe they don't call to my heart. Like, I don't really understand them, but I respect them for being out there. And so then if someone says they don't like my work, you know what? They have every opportunity. That's their opinion. And so I respect them that they took time to read my work and they took time out of their day to write a review that saying this wasn't my cup of tea. You know, some guy's like, I guess if you've ever been fired and you have a bunch of kids, you know, I guess I would relate to this story more. And I think that's fair. You know, I looked at all the books that he had read. Everything was James Patterson. It's like, that's not really, we're not in the same genre.
No, exactly.
So people are allowed to have their own opinions.
I don't know that they need to share them if they're that difficult or negative, but
I know, I wish they wouldn't. I'm like, just move along. Exactly. Return the book and move along.
Exactly. Oh my gosh. We're talking about people that have these feelings of negativity, and maybe they're looking inward and feeling just their own sense of failure, and wanted to talk with you for a bit about social media. We see this on Facebook and Twitter where people come out are so mean to other people anymore. Do you think that social media makes people even more scared or upset?
I was researching this. I'm doing this speech in front of a group, and I was researching social media and the impact of social media. And it was so fascinating because it had, initially, it relieves people of feeling isolated and lonely for a few minutes, you know, if they're engaging. But then as the screen time improves, it actually makes them feel more isolated and more insecure because people, not me, of course, because I will put, you know, I'm coloring my hair, my roots, and I've got a face mask on Facebook. Like, I like to put ridiculous funny things on Facebook, but the whole, you know, the family at the beach with the white shirts and the khakis, and it's filtered and it's beautiful and their new car, you start to feel, oh, my family is not like that. I don't look like that. My kids don't do that. And so then you start to feel very insecure. So I think Facebook could be such a wonderful thing you could use for finding groups. Like, you know, I have a writing group that I started on Facebook, and now we have 100 members, and that's all we do is lift each other up. And, hey, you know, try Pat. She's interviewing authors. You know, here's this. Make sure you're going to the library. Get involved with this. And so that's, I think Facebook could be used to reach out and actually, you know, end up leaving your home and going and have a cup of coffee with those people and not just sitting in your home and looking at screens of beautiful cars and beautiful vacations and beautiful children and thinking, my life isn't like that, when their life isn't like that either.
Exactly.
That's just one clip.
Absolutely. Well, I just wanted to touch on that because it does seem to be an issue these days. So let's talk happy again now. You seem to be everywhere in Atlanta. You're on morning shows, on NPR, on the cover of a magazine. How does that happen for basically an unknown author?
You ask, and you're not going to get told yes all the time, but my advice to that is you find people that you like, you know, a podcaster or a television show or whatever, and you write them or you call them. I came from a sales background, so I like to pick up the phone and call and usually follow up with an email and just say, and how you present yourself is, hey, I have this story, and I wanted to know if your audience would be interested in hearing my story. And that's it. And you make it very short. You don't send them, you know, 350 words. You send them a paragraph or two, maybe with some bullet points of, you know, Ham Local, or this is the theme of my book. This is the theme of my whatever. And would you be interested in me coming on the show and sharing that with your audience? And like I said, sometimes you get yeses and sometimes you get no's, but you're never going to get a yes if you don't ask. Mm-hmm. That's my advice. You just put it together. And the same for approaching local magazines or approaching local newspapers. If you're a writer, a lot of local newspapers will take your articles, and you're not going to get paid for those articles, but you could be a contributor, and then every single month your name and your book gets mentioned. It's like a free ad. Mm-hmm. And that's a win-win, and it's all you do is send them a writing sample. Hey, I enjoy your magazine. I'm interested in this type of content. May I please send you a writing sample? Yeah. And so there's lots of things that you can do that are cost-effective to get your work out there.
Yep. You never know until you ask, and it's a numbers game. You put it out there to enough people, somebody's going to pick up on it. So,
right.
Yep. Well, now, you give 10% of all your book revenue to charity, the Place of Foresight. Why did you decide to do that? And tell us a little about that organization.
They are a wonderful organization in our community that has been around, I think, for 30 years. And one thing that I love about them, I mean, they have some traditional things. They have a food bank, they have a thrift shop, stuff like that. But what I love about them the most is they really help people, especially women, become self-sustaining. And that's their commitment, is matching up people with what is it that they need to get on their feet. And I love that. Just one example of something that they've done wonderful recently is, to be honest with you, I'd never thought about this before. In the summer, if you are a minimum wage worker, let's say single mother, you have to quit your job in the summer because you can't afford daycare. And so a lot of people quit their jobs in the summer to be home with their kids, and then in the fall, you know, they start back up again, so they can't really get their careers going or move up. And so something that they did is they partnered with a big church in town for funding, and they partnered with the school, and they created a program that was really geared towards single mothers that allowed those moms to be able to put their kids in a safe environment and to have almost like a summer school, like a little summer camp, and improve. And it's a win-win. You know, they get to work. The county gets the taxes, you know, and it doesn't disrupt. And that's just one example that they're very committed to helping people get out of poverty. So that's why I was very excited about donating to them. I wish they, of course, donated, you know, maybe someday I'll sell 5 million books and I can donate a giant check. But right now I just donate a little bit every month.
That's okay. Paying it forward and sharing what you make with others who need help. I can't imagine anything nicer than that.
Well, they are a nice, nice group. It's run by Joni Smith here in North Atlanta.
Mm-hmm. All right. Mm-hmm. Put a little shout out for the Place of Forsyth in Atlanta.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. I want to talk about your cover art.
My girlfriend, and this is something I love about this book so much, this project, Pat, is from the very beginning of doing this book and doing the book launch, my girlfriends came forward and helped me. And so one of my girlfriends is a woman named Andrea Farinchek, and she's a professional photographer here in town. And we rented studio time, and we did a whole day of these hilarious pictures. And, you know, this is a more serious one. The back, of course, has my skirt tucked into my underwear, which is, you know, happened to most of us, right? We tuck our skirt and our pantyhose or our underwear. That's on the back. I did this photo shoot, took 500 pictures, and we looked at them like you would look at an Amazon, like you pull up a book and you see all the little books. They're like a you know, maybe an inch by an inch at the bottom. You know what I'm talking about? Like they scroll through. And this image of the white in the background with me in the black dress with the red chair, you know, really popped. And so that's why we picked that. And those are my husband's glasses, these oversized like Tom Ford glasses, and I hope that the look on my face is just like, I don't know what's going to happen next. You know what I mean? Or the look on my face is like, what have I done now? You know, how am I going to get out of this? Like, that's what that image is trying to project. I think it turned out really cute.
It really did, and I love the back cover because that spoke volumes as well.
We've all done that. I've done it with actually tucked the whole skirt and, you know, that little plastic thing that goes on the toilet. I put that also into my, and then I'm walking, I'm like, what's happening? Something's crunchy. And then they're like, hello, you have the toilet seat cover hanging out of your panties.
Oh, my gosh. So, I've walked out with the toilet paper stuck on my shoe and somebody had to say, hey.
I know. We've all done that. And, you know, this book is not necessarily about you tell every single one of your secrets to someone. I mean, I think your secrets are sacred and people have to build trust to learn your secrets. But there's nothing in this book that's really a secret. It's really just being a little bit more vulnerable that everything is not perfect in our lives. And once you let that down and let yourself be that, you're probably going to attract someone that is also honest. And that's the foundation, I think, of much better relationships with people instead of everything's perfect and my life is perfect. My husband's perfect and my children are perfect. That just, I've known people where I go to book club for 20 years and I do not know any more about a couple of those women than I did 20 years ago. They are very, very guarded and that's fine. Those aren't my people. I want to know if you had spinach in your teeth in your interview. I want to know that. I want to know what's happening in your life that's funny and that you failed and that you can laugh at yourself. I love that. I think that's what's beautiful about life, funny stories like that.
Absolutely. I think you're giving us a great message today. Any more books on the horizon then?
Yes, and you can help me and so can your listeners. I am writing a book called The Failures of My Friends. And as you can imagine, me as a writer coming up with whatever, how many stories, 70 stories, it actually was pretty easy for me because I had so many failures, but every single person has one killer laugh out loud until you almost cry funny failure story. And it could be on an airplane, it could be with pets, it could be with your husband. And so that is what I'm doing now. Imagine it's like the best of every single person that I know and compiling into, you know, different categories, the failures of my friends. And I'm so excited about it. I think it's going to be just hilarious.
We're going to look forward to that. Thank you. Thanks for sharing.
Coming soon.
Well, now, is there anything that we missed that you wanted to bring up today?
You know, something very exciting, I haven't really shared this, is I got, I received an inquiry about turning the book into a movie or sitcom. And it came out of nowhere. I mean, I'm not going to lie. I've been sending my book to everyone in Hollywood. I'm like, please, Ellen DeGeneres, have me on the show. Please, Kelly Ripa, have me on the show. Please, Oprah, have me on the show. So I don't know, you know, I don't know. They haven't disclosed to me. It's one of their clients has inquired. It's a, you know, it's an agency, and they said, hey, one of our clients has inquired about the rights to this book to be turned into a film or a sitcom. And so now I'm just waiting with bated breath. It's just such an ironic thing that I wrote a screenplay and couldn't get it going until I wrote a book, and then it's just so weird that then I write a book that might be turned into a screenplay. It's crazy.
That is insane.
I know. I'm so excited. And sometimes I let fear creep in. Like, for 1 minute, I was joyful, like, this is awesome. And then the next minute, I'm like, it's probably never going to happen.
Oh, I know. You always have that little voice on that other shoulder. Just shoo it off. Go away.
I know. And so I'm not going to do that anymore. I'm going to say thank you.
Yes.
And even if nothing happens, what a beautiful moment and what a exciting time. And I'm going to enjoy it. And if something comes from it, that I'm so excited, and if nothing comes from it, it was a really big, exciting day that email came in, you know.
Better than a sharp stick in the eye, right?
Exactly. That even somebody was thinking that.
Yes.
Somebody picked that up and said, and people tell me that all the time. They're like, this would make such a funny sitcom. This is so funny. And so the thought that one person thought that and actually pursued it and asked me about the rights, I have to be hopeful. I'm like, you know what? Somebody else is going to think that too, and maybe it will come to fruition. But if it doesn't, I'm just trying to enjoy the other stuff that I'm doing that's so fun and spreading the word.
Wow.
Share your failures.
So inspiring. I love talking to you. This is like therapy.
What's your deepest, darkest secret, Pat? Tell
me now. I'll tell you once we get off the air.
I want to put it in my next book.
All right. Let me think on that. There's several to choose from. Well, now, Amy, where can folks then go to learn more about you, and where can they purchase your book?
Oh, they can purchase my book on Amazon, and it's in paperback, it's in an ebook, and it's also available as an audiobook. This came out recently, read by an amazing New York City narrator. Her name's Angela Massey. I tried to read it myself, but it's weird. Stand-up, telling a story in a stand-up comedy setting or writing a story is very different than reading a story. And she just did it so beautifully. I outsourced it to her, and she kind of sounds like me, and it's really funny. But that's on Amazon. And then my website, if anyone would like to send me a funny fail, I'm collecting funny fails, they can send it to www.amylyle.me. which is actually not narcissistic. The .com had already been taken. So it's www.amylyle.me, and they can, you know, whatever, hit a button, sign up, and they could send me their fail via email. I would love that. And then I'm on Twitter, at Amy Lyle, and my Facebook page is also www.amylyle.me.
All right. Many places to find you. AmyLyle.me. That is so easy to remember. any final words then before we depart?
No, I just really enjoyed this interview so much. And thank you. Thank you for bringing life to my book and my story. I truly, truly appreciate it. This project, as I mentioned, has been so supported by people, and especially women. And it just warms my heart. Like, if nothing else comes out of it, it just warms my heart that there are so many women that want to lift up other women.
Yep. Well, you are, as I said several times today, you are extremely inspiring. You really are an inspiration for others to show that sharing your fears and your failures helps to build authentic relationships, and it encourages others to follow their dreams. So you can stop right now. You've done all the good in the world that you can. But please don't, because you've got lots more to share.
Please keep failing and writing about it.
Exactly. AmyLyle.me. Everyone head over there, and we're going to wait with bated breath for your new failure to come out.
Thank you.
Thank you, Amy.
You're welcome.